It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Here's a pistol. We ride the mesh point to Mason. Brock at a throw out left. Wide open. Debo Samuel makes the catch. And now speeding down the sideline. 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! San Francisco!
First touchdown receiving of the year for Debo.
Yeah, that's when the Seahawks probably knew they were in a little bit of trouble. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. But to their credit, the Seahawks actually did find their way back into this game. I mean, of course, it's a 49er game, yeah. So no lead is safe. But the 49ers end up prevailing 36-24. To be fair to the 49ers, they overcame injuries in this game. They overcame horrible calls in this game, ones that could have really changed just how the second half played out. Perloff, it was impressive by the 49ers. But have they answered all the questions that we've had about them?
They've answered none of the questions because they were dying to let the Seahawks into that game last night. You cannot be a Super Bowl contender and have the worst special teams unit in the entire league. And they cost them the entire game against the Cardinals, and then they didn't fix a single thing last night. They're so bad at covering kickoffs that their kicker has to make the tackle, gets hurt again at the end of the last, because they cannot cover a kickoff. I hate firing coaches, but that coach has got to go. This is 2024 in the NFL. Nobody returns kickoffs, and you let the Seahawks get one, get back in the game. So 2 weeks in a row, that is, to me, they have a 10-day bye. If they don't figure that out, that unit's going to cost them the entire season, on top of the fact that everybody, it wasn't, name a player who didn't get hurt at one point in the game. I mean, they're to their fifth running back, who's awesome, ironically. I mean, that doesn't seem to be a problem, but injuries, it's special teams. And the third thing that I noticed, their defense is not scary. Had one sack. It was with 35 seconds left in the game. It was meaningless. Their defense at the end of the game completely folded against the Seahawks. So it's just not the championship-level Niners that we saw a couple years ago. Last year, actually.
I did not have Perloff calling for the firing of the 49ers special teams coach on my bingo card this morning. I did not think that's the direction we were going in. But now that you say it, not that we're advocating for someone to get fired, but you're right. To have two kickers have to lay out to make tackles and throw their shoulder into it, they might be working out yet another kicker. And by the way, how far do you think you can go down the depth chart before the kickers start getting pretty bad? Because the dude they brought in off the street, he was good last night. He was good.
Right.
And thankfully they had him because their red zone offense is still not where you need to be. And that's what kept the Seahawks able to, it made them able to stick around in the first half. The 49ers were dominating in the first half. I mean, Geno throws a pick in the first drive. Yeah. They should have been almost in a insurmountable lead just in the first half alone. So you're right about that. But can I defend the 49ers a little? I know I've been critical of them. I know
Please.
That I've been, you know, I've been hard on Brock Purdy and I've been hard on Kyle Shanahan and everyone. But to be fair to them, these are division games. You know, they should have had a first down at the 18-yard line after an obviously muffed punt, obvious after, you know, every bit of replay we have. They should have had a first down at the 18, Pearl, mm-hmm. and they were basically, like, robbed of that. And it wouldn't have felt like, you know, the Seahawks scoring 14 straight points to get back into the game, and eventually you make it, you know, you pull ahead again because the Seahawks couldn't stop making mistakes. And threw, you know, Geno Smith threw another bad interception in the fourth quarter, and that's basically what sealed it, even though they made it look a little bit prettier at the end. But that Geno pick was terrible. And I thought their defense actually in the red zone was pretty good. Geno was throwing the ball all over the place. Now, that fourth and goal touchdown that somehow gets to Lockett, like, that's a...
Yeah,
felt
that was
like a miracle
fluid.
At that point.
No, you're right. They got a lot of pressure on Geno, but did not
get. Bosa did a great job, I thought, being disruptive. But no, he didn't register a sack.
No, you're right. And Bosa sort of took over the second half. But you know that thing about the division game. Like they Brock Purdy didn't lose a division game last year. They own this division. This division's not great. I mean, the Cardinals are just not that good a team, in my opinion. The Rams are so injured. They have no excuse to lose at any division game, and they let the Seahawks get right back in this game. The Seahawks are they're injured too.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see it on their defense. I don't know. They let up a lot of yards last night. The total, and they had a lot of yards. So Seattle got to 358 yards, and San Francisco had 483. Seattle was moving the ball, and I think San Francisco is now a bend-don't-break defense. When you have Nick Bosa and Fred Warner, you should not be a bend-don't-break defense. It just doesn't feel dominant to me.
No, it wasn't dominant.
But one thing is...
The first half actually was, but they can't get the ball in the freaking end zone. They're settling for field goals, and so, you know, you're only up 16-3.
Yeah, and even at the end, if you notice one thing... There was a couple plays where, they're trying to salt away the win, and DK Metcalf gets behind the defense and scores a touchdown. Of course, there was a holding call.
No, it was an illegal formation.
Illegal formation, right. Some random. That
Guys, get set.
That would have been a terrible defense mistake. And then in the last drive, Kenneth Walker breaks free and is standing wide open in the end zone, and Geno just misses him. Like, the Niners feel undisciplined on defense. But I will tell you one thing about the Niners. John Lynch... Put him in the Hall of Fame for this year's draft class. Who are these guys?
Two rookies come up with interceptions.
First quarter and fourth quarter. Dominic Pooney's all of a sudden the most dominant run blocker. And then our guy, Isaac Garendo, fifth string running back, breaks a run long. I did a deep dive on him, Maggie.
Okay, tell me everything you know.
Backup for 5 years at Wisconsin. 5 years. Then he had a 6-year at Louisville, because it's college football.
And you're 30, basically, with a family of four by the time you graduate.
Goes to the combine. He's 6 feet tall, runs a 4.33, and they take him in the fourth round. So he could be a star, the newest Niners star.
Well, and he's smart, too, because when he broke off that run, you didn't think so?
That was a huge mistake.
Wait, he slides down at the 4-yard line because they're trying to burn some clock. They're up by 5 with under 2 minutes left to go. I was like, this guy's brilliant. But then they end up scoring 2 plays later when they didn't really take a lot of time off the clock. I thought they were going to milk this thing for a lot longer.
There's two details of this game that stood out. The muff punt.
Which we'll get into.
Yes, which we have to break down. Isaac Garendo made absolutely the wrong move, and Debo called him out for it afterwards. So they were up 5, and basically he went down at the 4-yard line. They would have had to kick a field goal and be up 8, and that meant the Seahawks get another chance for a Hail Mary.
No, I thought they were going to score. I never thought they were going to score.
Why would they score from the 4-yard line? That's not a normal score.
I thought that what they were going to do was try to make Seattle burn all the timeouts, right?
But more likely they would have had to kick a field goal in that situation.
They were at the 2, right? At the 4, whatever.
4. They haven't run a touchdown in all season long from that spot.
No, when it's outside the red zone, they can actually score. It's just when they get in the red zone.
But if they kicked a field goal, then they were basically giving Seattle one more shot with about 30 seconds left, down 8.
Right. No, I know that.
So that's why Kyle Juszczyk ran that. He could have gone down too, but they knew the math. It was a tactical mistake by Greta. I think these young players are watching the announcer say that's a smart move. Debo called him out afterwards. He's like, that was a mistake. That's why we had to run in the next play.
So here's Kyle Shanahan on Isaac Garendo. Should have scored there.
Hell no. We want him to score. And I don't think he slid. That's what he's claiming. I think 21's a fast player, and he got him a little bit there at the end, I think. I mean, I'll see it. You guys saw it. But ended up working out better for us.
Yeah, that's funny. When he went down, I was like, oh, they're just going to kill clock here. But I guess Seattle had all three timeouts. Weren't they trying to make them burn all three?
I think they had two timeouts left.
Okay.
And yeah, but if they'd burned all three, if they'd had three timeouts, it would have been a huge mistake because that meant Seattle would have had an entire minute. So anyway, that was a put away situation. Like the math didn't work out because you only would have gone up eight with a field goal. Anyway, regardless, they're just shaky at the end of in the fourth quarter. There's no doubt about it. Do you feel confident in them when they have a lead?
No.
Yeah.
And it's weird because what did, we had Jory Epstein on yesterday from Yahoo, and she said something like they have a segment on their podcast called Two Things Can Be True at Once.
I think that
there's at times I feel like I'm watching the 49ers look very dominant on offense, yet they don't score points.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's been an issue. It has been an issue this season, and that's how you let people back in the game.
And why are they scoring points? Because
no CMC.
And what did they say at the end of the game, Maggie?
Okay, so I thought this was weird. At the end of the game, and at some point we'll find the audio for you, but at the end of the game, and anyone else tell me if you heard this too, there's about a minute left, okay? And Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit are yakety-yakking. And all of a sudden you see John Lynch on the sideline, and they start talking about John Lynch and how great he is and all that. They basically made it seem like John Lynch told them that Christian McCaffrey won't be back for 3 to 4 more weeks, and that felt optimistic, Perloff. And now listen, maybe this is just John Lynch telling Al Michaels something or telling Kirk Herbstreit something because they want to throw their Chiefs off the scent, right? Their next opponent. Or maybe they're just trying to hold this thing close to the vest. Maybe it's just an outright smokescreen. But if there's any truth to it, that's not, I think, what we thought was going on with Christian McCaffrey. I think we're watching him practice or hearing reports of him practice thinking he's back for this Chiefs game. Now, again, could have been a lie, could have been a smokescreen, could have been John Lynch trying to play games through the media. But 3 to 4 weeks, that is not the timeline I thought we were working with.
They 10 days, they have a mini bye here. It seems like everybody else thinks that he's a possibility for the Chiefs game, except for that report. Actually, if it's 10 days, 3 weeks, it's not that different a timeline.
No, like 3 to 4 more weeks, like games.
Right.
That's what they mean, like another four games.
Well, if it's 3 weeks, okay.
Like
weeks
in the NFL calendar.
I don't know. I feel like Christian McCaffrey's going to gut it out because they're 3-3 now. Like every game is important, including this upcoming Chiefs game. I hear you, and that does, I'm not doubting the broadcasters, but I feel like I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
All the vibes are that he's going to be back sooner rather than later. I mean, a little Achilles tendonitis, wrap that thing up and get out there, CMC.
I mean, a little Achilles tendonitis. He had to fly to Germany to get treated.
What happened? Pop some HGH in there. I don't know what you do in Germany. Just do it.
Nobody knows, Pearl. That's why you go to Germany. Nobody asks questions, apparently, when it's overseas.
True.
Yeah, totally fine. Totally cool. But I thought it was an odd kind of throw-in at the end of the broadcast.
Yeah,
and then Kirk Herbstreit kind of said something like, yeah, if McCaffrey comes back this year. I'm like, what kind of information are you guys hearing out there?
Yeah.
So,
and then he broke down the South Carolina Gamecocks offensive line.
I wish he would have.
I'm not sure. We'll see. Let's watch reports because Herbie and Al get kind of casual late in the game. I'm not sure that I totally buy that. I mean, it could be right. There was another thing that they said at the end of the game that stood out to me. They said, well, who else is going to challenge the Niners? They're still the cream of the crop in the NFC, in so many words.
Yeah, I didn't really understand that either. I think of all the years, this is the year you are challenging the 49ers in the NFC. I just said all these nice things about the 49ers, but you're telling me that, first of all, Minnesota Vikings off to a 5-0 start.
Nah, they don't scare me.
Detroit Lions.
They scare me.
Green Bay Packers.
Scare me.
Can I offer you a little Dallas Cowboys?
No, you can't.
How about your Philadelphia Eagles?
No.
Yeah, you guys feel pretty far away.
Don't even try the NFC South, Maggie.
They mentioned Tampa before they even mentioned the Lions. I don't even know if they even said the Vikings.
Tampa's only a field goal favorite against Spencer Rattler and the New Orleans Saints.
Well, no one can break the NFC South.
Yeah, the NFC South is quite hard to predict. I'll tell you one more. We have a, thrown a lot at the wall here about the Niners. You know who has snuck back into the MVP conversation? Brock Purdy. It's Brocktober. It's all happening. He had a big game yesterday. Now he has over 100 passer rating again. His stats are starting to climb up. He's clearly not a system quarterback because the system is totally broken. But there are backups everywhere.
Yeah, Brock had a couple good throws last night. You know, Brock's numbers always look
Maggie.
Pretty good.
I'm not trying
to be a hater again, but what did he do on the Deebo Samuel touchdown that we played to enter to start off the show? Like, again, they're bad in the red zone. Brock Purdy doesn't take any heat for that. None.
No.
Okay. Well, if you want to give the MVP, then crown him.
But he fixed it a little bit last night because he did.
He was not scrambling as much, I think.
You think?
Well, a little bit.
I mean, he must have run 50 yards back on one play. Remember when he started, he spinned to his right and just took off towards the opposite end zone and luckily threw the ball away?
I mean, as a young quarterback, though, it's not a terrible thing if he's out there trying to make plays with legs. At one point, he dove for a first down, too. I'm like, the head first stuff on a team that's had injury after injury after injury, I don't understand how. If you're Kyle Shanahan, you've got to get it through people's heads. Protect yourself.
Well, I saw a metric. He's holding the ball longer than any quarterback in the NFL this year. So he definitely is. Everybody on the team is getting hurt, and you're out there taking big hits. I worry about Brock Purdy's health, too. They might want to protect him and tell him to stop scrambling so much.
In the chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet and twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. A lot of chat about the future of Geno Smith.
Oh, now with Geno. The Seahawks. He's been so on point this year. I was surprised that he missed some throws that he's been hitting.
Yeah, he missed them kind of bad, too. You know, I get it. The stuff in the end zone, you want to try to put the ball in a place where only your guy can make the play because you obviously don't want to throw an interception in the end zone. So those, I guess, are a little more forgivable when they're high or when they're a little off target because you got to be super careful. But I thought some of the other throws, I did not think this was a great Geno game.
No, it was bad.
They were getting pressure on him, but they weren't bringing him down. I thought he was rattled. And this kind of felt like last week, too. The Giants got to Geno.
I think that they were trying to exploit DK Metcalf getting covered by a rookie, and they kept forcing it to Metcalf, and it threw off their entire offense. You know,
eventually they went to JSN, and he was a big part of their comeback.
And then that Bobo guy came out, got three passes in a row. Like, they're like, well, DK's not working because they're bracketing him. I think the entire first half, they said, we want to establish a run. That was the big storyline. So they were feeding the run, and then they got away from it again. I think that they really just, they have to run, and they just are not comfortable. Ryan Grubb's just not comfortable. It was kind of effective. I mean,
the two running backs combined for like 60 yards. Right? On 19 carries?
No, eventually Walker broke one, I think.
Oh, yeah, right. Probably until that long.
Actually, no, you're right. They only...
Yeah, I thought these two guys didn't. Yeah, it was Walker was 14 for 32 and Charbonnet was 5 for 20. I'm sorry, 52 yards.
Yeah,
19 carries.
19 carries is not enough. How many throws did Geno have? 52 throws.
Well, you're down two scores. You got to throw the ball to get back in the game.
You know what? They did not. They did not have to do that at all. They just have to wait for San Francisco to implode. You know, teams. You know, Sean Payton, by the way, they're down all the time and they keep running the ball. Like, old coaches run the ball. Andy Reid has been running. You got to run the ball, and they know it. They said that was the main storyline for Seattle. Run. You have Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet. You got to stick with it. I think they made Geno do too much last night.
Well, yeah, that was not great. The question today, you're welcome to weigh in about the Seahawks. You know, listen, I think Seattle is probably going to look for a quarterback anyway.
Yeah.
You know, Geno doesn't have this exorbitant contract. In fact, he might deserve a little credit for how he probably had a little more leverage at some points than he let on, or that maybe he felt, and he signed a very team-friendly deal. I think that, you know, you're going to have to get some new blood in there.
I mean, I'm kind of interested that they didn't take one this year, but I think they were too low in the draft, so obviously their OC had Penix and the Michigan tie with the Harbaughs, so they didn't get McCarthy or Penix. Would have made sense. But are they going to be bad enough to get a quarterback, though, Maggie? They're probably going to be around 500.
Yeah, but you got to find something. I don't know if Geno's the answer. And then the 49ers, I know we got tons of Seattle Seahawks fans, tons of 49er fans who are listening to us in this very early hours of the morning. Did the 49ers answer any questions in your opinion? Did they put to bed any of the, you know, perceived red flags, if you will? Okay. Let's hold out, Michaels. We'll get to him in just one second. A couple interesting moments on the broadcast, including a massive screw-up. massive screw up by the referees yesterday. These are rare that you get them this poorly officiated moment in a game. But was it not their fault? We'll get to all the details of this. You got to hear it next. It's Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. I'm always hesitant to criticize a potential corporate overlord, but sometimes Amazon is still finding themselves as an NFL TV production. First of all, last night was a classic situation where you had to go two screens because there was a baseball game in the WNBA Finals and the Amazon game. And
two baseball games happening when that game started. It was the end of Cleveland and
Detroit. Oh, that was still going on? Okay.
Yankees Royals was like in the third inning or so in that game.
Yeah, no, I actually got caught up in an episode of Bones on TBS because I was trying to find... It was this is totally a side issue, but baseball not being on consistent channels is... definitely a ratings kill. I mean, you're telling me everyone knew where everything was last night?
On my TV, it was one, their channels are back-to-back.
Yeah, I don't know. In a modern era, still, I keep forgetting like what's on Fox and what's on TNT. They're not back-to-back for me. One's on 3 and one's on 8 for me. And then,
are you going to survive?
It is annoying to me that you have to go into the streaming to watch the game on Thursday night. But when I was watching the game, most important play, arguably, the game was this muff punt that they did not call. Kyle Shanahan threw the red flag and said, hey, let's look at this. And then the replay center in New York looked at it. It did end up in slow-mo. You could see it hit the Seattle Seahawks player's hand and therefore should have been Niners ball. It was more complicated because the Niners player was blocked into the punt returner. Long story short, they screwed up the call, Maggie. And what was your reaction to this play? Or do we want to hear it first?
So here's my reaction to the play. I think that we've seen enough football now that whatever issues you may have with replay review or whatever you think about where we are in sports when it comes to these kind of replays, I think we believe we have enough angles. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's the very rare play where you're seeing 100 angles on this thing from a camera and you still don't know. I think those are still pretty rare. You got, right, what, 35 cameras on this game last night, minimum? I thought last night you obviously had enough camera angles and Amazon had an enhanced view, mm-hmm, of the punt hitting D. Williams on the hand. This was not one of those plays that we needed to argue till the end of time. This was not a what's a catch, what's not a catch. It looked like there was evidence that if they had just had the right replay review, this would have been obvious. San Francisco ball at the 18, ready to punch in another score and make this a margin game, probably.
And you say that, but listen, the broadcast itself, when did they it took them at least 5 minutes of real time to show that replay. They were so clueless as to what was actually happening on the field. It's a punt that actually looked like it hit him. It was a visual illusion that it looks like it just hit the punt returner. They were so focused on the illegal block that they never mentioned it. And they basically took a break and they started talking about something completely different for an entire minute. Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit had no idea that punt might have been a muff. They totally were out to lunch. So nobody in the production truck knew what was going on. Obviously, it was hard to see. And I think if you think it's a conspiracy theory, you're assuming a level of competence is just not there. They had no idea. They did not find that angle.
So my eyebrow goes up because I'm like, well, and I'm not trying to, I have no evidence that this happened. So but this was starting to become a game again. This was a game again. I'm sorry. Seattle just scored 14 straight points. This was a game again. It would have made it not a game again, right? This would have made a two-score game again. This was right after Seattle scored to cut the deficit to 6. So, I mean, obviously you think San Francisco is going to punch in a touchdown there, and then all of a sudden... It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo.
the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
And now we're back to, all right, people flipping away from Amazon. And so I was like, geez, is Amazon withholding replay angles? And the reason why I say that is because there's somebody named Mark Butterworth. He's the replay review czar.
That's his real name.
Apparently.
Crazy.
I mean, I might use a fake name if that was this is my job. He's the replay review czar, NFL's vice president of instant replay. He said after that once referee Craig Rolstad made his announcement that the call stands and that Seattle retained possession, they came back from TV. The network had an enhanced shot that they did not send at all until after they played his announcement. So Amazon, this is what the instant replay guy is pushing the buck totally on Amazon. He's saying they had an enhanced view of this muff punt and they didn't send it to us in the replay review until after the referee had announced to a crowd of 180,000, it's Seattle ball.
Right, and you watch the whole game, and you think you're positing that Amazon did this intentionally, and it just wasn't their 50th screw-up of the entire game.
I'm just having a little fun here. But
they had no idea what was going on in that play, and it was just totally what happened was basically a Niners guy, he was coming down, he got pushed into the returner, and it sent the entire truck into total chaos. They had no idea what was happening. But you're saying that they were so smart that they intentionally held that back? That's crazy.
I just don't understand how they had this, they had an enhanced view, but couldn't get it to them in time. Now, again, this was a call that was made on the field, and then Kyle Shanahan challenges it. So now you've got a little time.
Yeah.
You know, you can take a breath here. We all get it. You're going to go to commercial break. You're going to do, you know, we have a challenge on the field. It's an extra moment to try to get this right. And they still got it wrong.
Yeah, I think this is pure incompetence. Whatever I hear, my wife works for the government, and whenever I hear a government conspiracy theory, I just laugh so hard. I'm like, these people can't even find a find a number two pencil, let alone come up with it. I mean, the idiocy of others is always underestimated. To think that there's some genius conspiracy, there's no way. If Amazon tried to do that, there's no way they could get it right. I mean, all of a sudden they're going to get that right, and they can't do. There's so many problems with that broadcast, and I'm sorry. To think that they intentionally did that is crazy. Why would they come back? Why would they have their officiating expert call the NFL for an explanation immediately afterwards?
I don't know. Everyone's trying to cover their tracks. It doesn't make sense, but I'm just, it raised my eyebrow. I would love to put you and your wife in a room with Aaron Rodgers to talk about conspiracies. Like, it's not that serious. Peter Schwartz is in with us this
Good
morning.
Good morning.
Doing headlines. A happy Yankee fan this morning.
Yes, happy Yankee. Relieved.
Yeah, Yankee fans can't actually ever be happy.
I don't have the same joy that Met fans do. It just, you know, because they were expected to win, and I don't have a warm and fuzzy feeling about them. I just don't.
Is this a likable team? This should be a likable team.
I think there's a difference between likable and just warm. Like, I don't have any confidence in them. Like, I'm like, a part of me is stunned that they won the series.
Really?
Why would this team be likable?
Well, just, I think Aaron expensive. Judge is very likable.
Well, likable to who? Likable to just the general baseball population?
No, yeah. To the fans. Like, the Mets fans like this team.
Yeah, well, I can see that. Because they're a plucky underdog. Well,
they're an underdog with, like, one of the highest payrolls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if
you don't,
I mean,
like Juan
I
Soto?
Like all of them. I mean, it doesn't matter to me whether, you know, like, who's on the team. As long as they win, I mean, it doesn't make a difference to me. I still look at this team, and I just don't feel like... I just don't look at this team as a championship team. I'm actually stunned.
Carlos Stanton's out here stealing bases. That will give you confidence.
I'm part of me is stunned that they beat the Royals.
I'm going to be honest. We are friends with a lot of Yankee fans. Yankee fans are all over this country. This is not just a New York thing. It's the one baseball team besides the Dodgers probably that has this real national and international fan base. You guys seem miserable. It feels not fun to be a Yankee fan. You have 27 world titles. Well, this should be so much fun.
They don't owe me anything in my life. They really don't. I mean, I've seen them win a lot. So, right. Like, it's not like the end of the world if they don't win. But, like, if the mission statement is to get to the World Series, then I want to see them get to the World Series. I just don't think they're going to.
Yeah.
Also, Juan Soto feels like a bit of a mercenary. Is he, you know, does that really feel like a Yankee?
No, if he signs an 8-year contract, then I'll consider him a Yankee. But like, no, I think he's a hired gun until he winds up signing, you know, pen to paper.
I think I disagree with. We've argued about this before. I think there's a large distance between Shohei's popularity and Aaron Judge's popularity. He's a number two player. Like I get it. I'm not sure like Aaron Judge making the World Series would be anything like Shohei.
Well, I mean, Shohei's got a whole other country.
I think
still
even
behind him, like,
and I don't even think it has anything to do
with
that.
He's a phenomenon.
But
he's
a
not
freak.
Pitching this time. It's,
yeah, but even so, even at the player, I mean, he's the first 50-50 guy. He's
fast and he's got it all.
Fascinating.
Yeah. If he was pitching, it would be a no doubt. I mean, I was watching the World Baseball Classic, which
I generally don't
watch just because I'm watching Shohei strike out Mike Trout. That was like one of the great baseball moments of the century, and it wasn't even a Major League Baseball game.
Yeah, something about Judge. Judge is definitely way, way up there, but it's not like, because he's not hot right now. Like, I don't need to see Aaron Judge in the World Series.
Well, I think some of that is because we kind of went through our Judge moment when he broke the AL record.
Yeah, he peaked already.
Right, so now, like, I don't want to say he's old news, but, like, Shohei right now is the thing. So.
Right, we haven't had the peak Shohei on the field yet.
Got it, yeah.
I mean, who knows? He probably won't even get there.
I mean, we'll see.
We'll begin in Kansas City in Game 4 of the ALDS.
And Weaver deals to Curiel. A high fly to center. This is it. Judge is there. He makes the catch. Ball game over. American League Division Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
John Sterling on Yankees Radio. Yankees beat the Royals 3-1. They win the series 3-1. Gerrit Cole was outstanding last night. 7 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 4 strikeouts. Cole and the Yankees moving on.
We got a lot of work to do. I mean, we're going to face a really tough opponent, so it's going to come down to playing together as a unit and just, you know, continue trying to improve on the brand of baseball that we're playing.
Yankees advance to the ALCS for the 19th time. Game 1 is in New York Monday night, but who the Yankees play in the ALCS, that has yet to be decided.
The 2-2 delivery. Swung on. Hit a ton. Deep left. Green. Back. Track. Wall. Gone! David Fry! Off the bench. A 2-strike. 2-out. 2-run home run.
Tom Hamilton, Guardians Radio. The Guardians beat the Tigers 5-4, evens the series at 2 games apiece, forcing a Game 5 Saturday night. David Fry said, a home run like that's a dream come true.
You dream about it as a kid and think about it all the time and in the offseason and when you're working on stuff, and then it happens and it goes by real quick. I remember looking at the dugout and high-fiving Sandy and then just black out, and then you're in the dugout cheering with the boys. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
How about this? Cleveland had lost 11 straight elimination games until last night.
I saw that graphic last night.
That's
crazy.
That's incredible.
I've never seen a sadder group of human beings than the Tigers fans walking out of that stadium last night. That's the worst way to lose. I'd rather lose 13-1 than think you had the game won.
Yeah, but there was no way that Emmanuel Classe was going to be blowing more saves. You know,
yeah.
He's too good, and it was feels like such an anomaly that he gave up that 3-run home run in the last game. He's lights out.
We talked about the people who like Yankees. Can I speak for the Yankee haters here?
Sure.
Because this is one of those series where you have to make a tough decision. Do you want the better team to face the Yankees, who's definitely the Guardians, or the better story? Because I think we don't want the Yankees in the World Series if you're a Yankee hater.
Right.
So sometimes, though, we get the situation where the Tigers are such a lovable story.
Clearly, you're afraid of the Yankees as a Mets fan.
No, I want the smoke. I really do want to face the Yankees, to be honest. But seriously, though, like, I think I'm not even talking about me, just the Yankee, the people out there
right.
who say, okay, who can beat the Yankees? Like, you kind of have to root for the Guardians, right?
Well, I mean, both teams throughout their history have had some success against the
it's
Yankees.
True.
But, I mean, with the Tigers, it was a weird situation.
And the Tigers, it feels like
Jeter got hurt, A-Rod was a mess.
Yeah, the Tigers, it feels like it's a real David versus Goliath if they have to face the Yankees.
Yeah, but, the trend has been the 80-win team gets to the World Series, not the 90-win team. So,
yeah.
I think the Tigers have a slight advantage of that. I mean, the Mets have 80 wins, too. Like, it's been almost every year somebody with less than 90 wins makes it. So, to say that Cleveland's a better team is an irrelevant fact in modern baseball, I think.
I hear you.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Who do you want to face, B? You're a Yankee fan.
I think I want Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah, I think I want Cleveland.
Man.
That's stunning to me.
You could thump the Tigers.
I think I would be a little concerned.
Why do you say that? Like, that's just not how baseball is anymore.
I think I would be afraid to play the Tigers. I just think there would be just so much. The Yankees would be such colossal favorites to win that series. I'd rather play Cleveland.
I'm with Peter. I'm still scared, haunted by 2007 when the Yankees lost to the Tigers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That was a weird circumstance.
See, I was relieved they won last night because I'm still carrying the pain of 1980 when they lost to the Royals.
You're still carrying that pain?
I am because...
Because George Brett's on the broadcast every moment?
Well, because my father and I had tickets for Game 4. Because my uncle's company had Yankee season tickets, and he asked me before the series, how many games will the Yankees win the series in? And I said, I think they'll win in 4. So he hands me and my dad 2 of his company's tickets for Game 4. I never got to see it, so I carried that pain all these years.
Peter, how many World Series does the team have to win
to erase your pain? But at the time, I'm like a 13-year-old kid would like to go see a playoff game, you know?
If you're still carrying that around, you might want to see a professional.
I was carrying it around. I wanted to smack the Royals around, but I'm surprised that they won because I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the team.
Sounds like it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. NFL Week 6 got underway last night in Seattle.
Play clock at 5-4. Snap to Brock. Brock going to throw left for the end zone. It's caught by George Kittle. Touchdown! San Francisco!
Greg Papa on Niners Radio. Niners over the Seahawks 36-24. Brock Purdy, 255 yards, 3 touchdowns. 2 of them to George Kittle.
I think just going into the game, you know, it was, if they run this is my answer. And simple as that. I just try to keep it simple and obviously check the ball down when I needed to and hit my number one or number two in my progression as efficiently as I could. And I just kept it simple.
Deebo Samuel had 3 catches for 102 yards and a touchdown. Now, speaking of things that really make me miserable.
Yeah.
Jets interim head coach Jeff Ulbrich has stripped offensive coordinator Nate Hackett of play calling responsibilities, turning them over to quarterbacks coach Todd Downing. Just, it's like in My Cousin Vinny, just like you're spinning your tires in the mud in Alabama with this team.
Well, we're going to talk about this because I think we may owe Andrew Perloff a bit of an apology. It's possible.
Oh, for what? The Rodgers thing?
Maybe.
You mean when there were 27 reports saying that he was blindsided and you guys totally didn't believe any of those insiders?
Yeah. Well, that's not exactly what I think I'm going to be apologizing for. And I'm not even sure I'm going to offer a formal apology. I'm going to, I'm going to tap dance a little around. You have like half an apology.
I don't care about Aaron Rodgers. I don't even want this apology. I'm so over this guy.
You can't not take an apology. If someone's offering one to you, you got to accept it.
I don't agree with that.
What? You have to accept an apology?
No, you don't,
you don't have to hold somebody to it. But you can say, all right, you don't have to accept an apology. I'm not talking about like deep-seated family issues and stuff like that. Like there's some stuff you can't get over. That's fine. But if a friend offers you an apology, you take it.
Yeah, but if it's about Aaron Rodgers, like, that's just another excuse. Do we have to? I can't give this guy any more oxygen. I'm over it.
You better buckle up.
Monday night, it's going to be.
You're over it. We haven't even gotten started yet.
Honestly, like, I'm dreading next Monday night so much because it's going to be, the nation is going to be taken over by this man.
What else is new?
Let me close with game one of the WNBA Finals. Minnesota down 18 in the first half. They come back and beat the New York Liberty 95-93 in overtime. Game two is Sunday afternoon.
We got to get into that game. That was nuts. I turned it off.
Same.
I thought it was over.
Wait, yeah, that was bad.
We'll get into that. Stars coming up short in that game, so we've got a lot to do. Peter, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. We'll try to offer Perloff an apology. He's not going to take it. I also have a question for the group. I need a little help on something. We'll get to that in a moment as well. It's Maggie and Perloff. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We'll get back to the 49er game in just a moment. 49ers beat the Seahawks last night, but did they really convince anybody that they've cured any of the problems, red flags that they've been showing over the last couple weeks? All right. We spent a lot of time, a lot of oxygen this week on what's going on with the Jets because they fired their head coach, and then Aaron Rodgers basically said, I had nothing to do with it, and not only did I have nothing to do with it, I'm offended by the mere insinuation that I had anything to do with this. There was a report that Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator and Rodgers' guy, was going to be demoted, and maybe that contributed to Rodgers being upset with Saleh. Like, maybe they were getting wind of the fact that Saleh wanted to make a change, which, by the way, would have been the best move that Robert Saleh could have ever made, is to demote Nathaniel Hackett. What took you so long? But maybe Rodgers got wind of that, didn't want his guy being embarrassed, and maybe Rodgers felt some kind of way about that. Well, it turns out, doesn't matter, because Nathaniel Hackett is getting demoted. Maybe not in title, Perloff, but in responsibilities. He will no longer be calling the plays. A guy by the name of Todd Downing is now going to be calling the plays. First of all, mini apology to you. Maybe this wasn't the wide-ranging Aaron Rodgers pulling of the puppet strings, because if he was... If he did have all total absolute power, Nathaniel Hackett probably remains the play caller. I still think Rodgers could have saved Robert Saleh if he wanted to and didn't decide to do that. So he did show some kind of power by sort of not banging the table for Robert Saleh. So that's number one. But number two, do you think the offense is going to change at all now with a new play caller?
Well, listen, when you go to the passing game coordinator, because I've watched the Jets passing game, you can expect it to be even worse. Like, Todd Downing, what's the difference? You know who Todd Downing is? He's a Nathaniel Hackett assistant.
Yeah.
I just was looking at his resume. He was with Hackett in Buffalo. Like, he's just nothing.
The Titans, right? It was.
Well, he was 2014 in Buffalo. That's where he got his big time break from Nathaniel Hackett. This guy is exactly the same. He's basically a lackey to Nathaniel Hackett. So I can't get excited about this. I do not accept your apology. I am so over this Rodgers offense. Like, I don't even understand, like, what. I feel like it's going to be more of the same. Because Todd Downing has been as bad as Nathaniel Hackett.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
We can quibble about Rodgers' influence and how much power he has in the organization and all that. I think everyone believes Rodgers has power at the line of scrimmage, right? When push comes to shove in the game.
Well, I don't know about that. You're saying, like, but he only has a limited number of options. Like, if you call a bad play, he can't, like, reinvent it at the wheel at the line of scrimmage.
No, he can't, but he's the type of quarterback that does have autonomy, right? And yeah. And by the way, he should, right? Has he not earned that?
He's got, like, two options. It's not like he can say, like, let's completely scrap the play and do something totally different.
Well, I'm just saying, even the game plan week to week. So say even take away the line of scrimmage, right? The actual in the moment.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Like, even for the game plan, it'd be stupid for an offense coordinator to not lean into a 20-year veteran quarterback. Even if you think Rodgers has lost a step or he's hurt or he's not the same guy as Green Bay, all that stuff, he still should have the respect of being, you know, 100% involved in the game planning and 100% involved in these are the plays I want to run and these are the plays I don't want to run. So, and to that extent, I agree with you. I don't know what's going to change here.
Right. Is the issue, I have a question for you. Do you think the issue is play calling more, or the fact that Rodgers is having trouble planting, or just lack of familiarity and gelling? Because Rodgers still hasn't played that much with these guys.
Right.
Like, why is it not working? Is it just a matter of bad play calls?
I think it's everything.
I think it's execution. I think if he was healthy, I heard a really great piece of analysis. Like, you don't think of Rodgers as a mobile quarterback, but in a close game, he always has one big run in the fourth quarter. Like, he doesn't have any of his secret weapons anymore because he can't move like he used to.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought of Rodgers as a running quarterback like Michael Vick, but I always thought of him as a super athletic quarterback.
Yeah, and when he needed it, he could draw on it. I think, ask the Bears. He would always kill them with a late fourth quarter run. I just think that he's not rounded into shape the way he wants. So I don't expect any major difference with play calling. I do think they'll beat your Bills because you've been telling me all year long that the Jets and the Bills will split till the end of
time. It's just a fact of life. EJ, you're a big Jets fan. Are you expecting the offense to change now with Todd Downing calling plays? Nathaniel Hackett is going to be, I don't know, pouring Gatorade.
Is that what he's going to be doing now?
Can he handle that?
Yeah, I wouldn't trust him with that. He's going to pour it on Rodgers' hands and make a fumble or something like that. No, I feel like the Jets offense should be better because I don't think it can get worse, quite frankly. I
mean, what a ringing endorsement.
Rock bottom.
I know, but like their offense.
Be careful with rock bottom and the Jets.
I know, but the fact that they've been unable to run the ball, and the fact that I feel like they've been putting Rodgers in terrible positions to have to get third and long, third and over and over again. As long as they're doing something different than what Hack is doing, I think that in the short term, it's going to change up things. And I think just changing tendencies will affect the defenses. But
how receptive do you think Rodgers is going to be to Todd Downing now? Like, when push comes to shove, when you're game planning, you're in the room, and he's like, I want to do this, like, Rodgers is still leading those meetings. And in my mind, it feels like he'd be leading those meetings.
Downing's been part of the game plan all year long. He's a passing game coordinator before this.
Right. So
he's there.
Yeah, well, my hope is that because he's a passing game coordinator, maybe he will throw the ball on first down every now and then. Like, is that an idea? You know, Nathaniel Hackett run off first and second out every freaking series. So hopefully they can maybe be more aggressive early in the drives. But I think he will be more receptive. Oberg said that he was supportive of the move to switch from Hackett to Downing. And when you're old and you're injured, you're beat up, and you're getting embarrassed because that's what's happening to Aaron Rodgers, I think you start to say, okay, someone give me, what are you seeing that maybe I'm not seeing? I think this is the moment where he'll be more receptive. Remember, this guy thinks he's Superman. He thinks he can do anything. He thinks he's above reproach. And for the most part, if you're Aaron Rodgers, for your life, that's kind of been true.
Right.
MVPs, superstar, celebrity, you can't tell this guy anything. He's not that guy anymore, like Ian O'Connor said earlier this week. So I think this was the only chance you have maybe to finally get him to be receptive to some different play calling schemes.
I think that's I will believe that when I see it, because I think the opposite happens. I think when adversity hits, I think people revert back to what they feel comfortable with, right? What got me here?
Yeah.
And what got me here is me being the guy. And I know that he's limping around and it's not the same because he's definitely hurt and he's definitely older, Pearl. But yeah. I don't think he says, oh, this is the time I have to loosen the reins. I think this is the time where he feels like he has to hold them tighter than ever.
That being said, I've watched your Bills play. Maggie, actually, they were better last week. They can't stop the run.
No.
I'm not passing once on first down. I am running right at them all game long trying to wear them down. I don't know what the weather's going to be on Monday night. But, yeah, I don't want a big Rodgers game. Like, I want, against Buffalo, like, the more Rodgers has to do, the least likely you are to win.
No, I mean, the combination of Breece Hall and Braylon Allen should be able to win you the game.
Right,
Buffalo they don't have an answer.
Right. But that combo should be great, and it hasn't been. EJ has a good point. That's the most disappointing part of this team, is that they can't run all of a sudden.
You can weigh in. Do you think things are going to change now? Are the Jets and Aaron Rodgers about to go on a little run here? 855-212-4227. Coming up, which college quarterback has the most on the line this weekend? Got a very busy and awesome college football weekend lining up. We'll get to that next.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.